Great. So this slide just outlines some of the categories that we're going to go through specifically to go through requirements for these categories. These are purely non-immigrant intent categories that we see, I think, the most when it comes to having clients with employees or clients who are employees who want to then apply for permanent residence. These are some of the most common categories and some that you really have to be careful when navigating the permanent residence process and the various steps involved. So we'll go through the requirements for these categories and kind of give you an idea of common scenarios for permanent residents for each.
Okay. So we'll start off with a couple categories here that I tend to work with a lot these days, as you can imagine, and being at a university. F1 students. Now, these I did see a lot in private practice, which is not so much the case for the J1s, but you know, and those are the folks who are coming here to participate in a full course of study at an institution, you know, established institution that has been, they've gone through a process with the government to get recognized and get into this CBIS database. The thing with them is students do have some specific situations in which they're authorized for employment. But they're not going to be generally authorized for employment. It really has to fit within one of these defined categories, or they're going to run into other problems. Now, the one I think as attorneys in private practice you see less frequently is these first two categories are the ones you probably don't see as often. On-campus employment, which doesn't require anything special, and that can be, you know, any kind of job as long as it's on the campus. You know, there's some restrictions there as far as how much time they can spend on it, but it tends to be pretty straightforward. The ones that are a little messier, then you get into curricular practical training where you're talking about employment authorization that is an integral part of the curriculum that the student is following and that is, you know, further directly tied to what their field of study is. That does require an explicit authorization from the school, as indicated on the student's I-20 form. Similarly, with optional practical training, you know, that also requires an active endorsement from the school. In most cases there, you're going to be seeing people who also will have an EAD that they needed to apply for, not just the I-20 that's been endorsed. And I think that's the one certainly that when I was in private practice, we encountered the most often, because you'll see it in particular at the conclusion of someone's program of study. You know, they graduate, they have their year of OPT, and during that time they're working and they're probably working, you know, going through the process of trying to get into a visa status that will allow them to work, you know, longer term, you know, maybe an H-1B or something like that. But I guess one of the key points here is, like I said, the F1 does have this heightened requirement of saying, you know, you have to maintain that residence abroad and have no intention of abandoning it. You know, now that honestly, in a lot of cases of especially like undergraduates, that may be, you know, a parent's house, or something like that. That's okay. It's not a requirement that they own property. Just they have to have somewhere they can go back to if they leave here. Regardless of which of these situations they may be in, whether they're working, whether it's on campus, CPT, OPT, that intent requirement remains there at all times. So even when they're allowed to work, it doesn't change the fact that they are still required to maintain that non-immigrant intent. And then in the case of their spouses, one of the drawbacks of this category is that they are not able to obtain employment authorization. All right. And numerically, that's a certainly much bigger group, the F1s and their dependents, than this next one that I'm going to talk about, which is your J1 exchange visitors. And that's the one in my day-to-day job that I work with the most. And those are individuals coming to the U.S. for participating in a program that's been approved by the Department of State for a variety of purposes. They have this kind of common theme of cultural exchange. You know, they're going to come here, they're going to teach, do research, receive training, including graduate medical education. And they're going to, you know, learn some cool stuff about being in the United States, and then they go back home and their home country benefits from that knowledge. The specific activities they can participate in will vary very widely, because you have things ranging from au pairs to research scientists to physicians doing medical training. So for a lot of those programs, they will be authorized to work, but only in a very specific capacity. You know, our researchers are here to participate in research in, you know, virology or whatever it may be at UTMB, but they can't just go do whatever they want work-wise.